really honoured to have the man of the moment with us here this evening, today, this morning, whenever you're going to catch us. Professor Denis Roncourt, I hope I've got the pronunciation okay. I've listened to you there with Alex Jones, 2 hours setting the world straight. Of course, you're telling us things that people really, really don't want to hear. But I've got to say, you are the most important scientist out there, taking on the cult of scientism right now and doing an incredible job. And you're everything they don't want because you're moderate. You know, you don't come across as crazy and you're stating facts really coolly and calmly. And you're using science. You're actually using the scientific method, something we can actually trust when they say trust the science. And funnily enough, I was talking to a friend just before we came on, and she does these hold the line where you hold up cards and boards at roundabouts on rainy Saturdays in Ireland. And she was coming up with some new boards. And one of them was 17 million deaths linked to the COVID vaccine. And I said, well, what do you know? I'm about to talk to the scientist who came up with that figure. Professor Roncourt, thank you so much for taking the time, because I know you really are busy right now. Everybody wants to talk to you, which is wonderful. They may not want to hear what you have to say, but they want to talk to you. Will you tell us, how did you come up with that 17 million figure?
Well, first, I want to say it's a pleasure to be here with you, Aisling. And I'm happy to be speaking to the Irish people. And we do have some data that's specific to Ireland that we'll get into later today that shows what is really happening in terms of excess all-cause mortality in Ireland and what is continuing to happen. So we're going to get to that. But you asked me, well, how did I come up with how did my research team come up with 17 million? Well, first of all, it's a research team effort. There are 4 of us in that particular work, Marine Baudin, Joseph Hickey, and Jeremy Mercier, and myself. We're all PhD scientists in different disciplines. 2 of us are physicists, and we are doing the heavy lifting in terms of these difficult calculations, statistical analysis, making sure we have good data that is not corrupted. And then doing a thorough analysis without imposing any interpretations a priori. So that's what we do. And I have written more than 30 large research reports about COVID-related science. And several of them are now published in peer-reviewed scientific journals. Another one is coming out in a peer-reviewed scientific journal. In fact, the one that reported the 17 million calculation is a large 180-page report, and that is coming out in the next few months, the editors tell us. They're now working on putting it in its final form for publication in that journal, and we'll be very proud to say that it is now in a peer-reviewed journal with a very well-regarded editorial board and so on. So that's happening now. Now, how did we come up with 17 million? Oh, well, it's a long story to come down to one number like that. But basically, what we're seeing, Aisling, is when we start looking at all-cause mortality, I don't know how you can explain this succinctly. You kind of have to start and explain what all-cause mortality itself is. And that is the counting of deaths. So irrespective of any cause of death that you might want to attribute, when a person dies, it's unambiguous, they're dead, and you can count that death. And Ireland and all the countries, the great majority of countries, have been doing that for more than 100 years. So they're counting deaths. They know when the date at which the person died, they know how old the person was, and they know where they died in the country, for example. So at the very basic level, and they know whether it's male or female, and sometimes they know many other things as well. So they know that basic information, and therefore they can make that public. They can make public not the name of the person, but they can make public how many people died per day, for example, over the last 10 or 20 years. And you can see a graph of the mortality, the all-cause mortality, on a time basis, so per day or per week or per month or per year. And that is the fundamental data that we've mainly been analyzing. Now, when we look at that data, we look at it in different jurisdictions, so now we've looked at almost 150 countries in the world. We've been doing this for more than 3 years. When you look at that data, what you find is that there are these large and distinctive peaks of anomalously high mortality. And they're not the same everywhere. They have all kinds of features that sometimes they occur in one country and they don't occur in the country immediately neighboring that country that had large economic exchanges, the pair of countries. You start looking at this data, and what we've concluded from looking at all this data, because we also are theoretical epidemiologists, we've written two papers so far with co-author Dr. Joseph Hickey on theoretical epidemiology in peer-reviewed journals. And so we know what the theory is, what the paradigm is that is operating here in terms of how these diseases spread. And if you accept that paradigm, you can prove from the mortality data that in fact nothing was spreading. This is very important. So we have been arguing for years now that we can prove that there was no pandemic in the sense that there was no particularly virulent pathogen that was spreading and causing the excess mortality. So there is a lot of excess mortality. There are many features in it, but it is always due to the assaults against vulnerable people.
Well, you see, what you're saying makes absolute sense. And a lot of us have sensed it. You know, we've sensed, wait a second, the flu disappeared. You know, this PCR test is dodgy. Dr. Kerry Mullis, the inventor of it, had warned us before his premature death. You know, we had all these clues. We had all these links along the way. But we couldn't quite put it all together until you came along and just said it. It was like saying the emperor's got no clothes. SARS-CoV-2 seemed to be some kind of computer-generated sequence. People still say, but wait a second, I was so sick and I lost my sense of smell and this was different. It was real. My sickness was real. And you can say, yes, I do believe that you were sick. I understand that you were sick. But what they were selling us, what the World Health Organization was selling us, was something completely different, and it's unproven. And you are confirming that.
Well, we're not just saying it clearly. We have proven on the basis of mortality that the excess mortality events around the world are always tied to assaults against people. So these can be assaults in hospitals, very aggressive treatment protocols, which were ill-advised, assaults in terms of refusing to treat people. So there was a huge epidemic of bacterial pneumonia in the United States that was affecting the poor, especially in states that had a lot of people living in poverty, and they were not prescribing antibiotics like they normally do. These are precisely the populations that normally get prescribed a lot of antibiotics. And so we have explained that all of this mortality is the result of these assaults, including the vaccine rollouts. So there's a multitude of assaults. And, you know, when you describe this to your audience, which, you know, we're mainly middle-class people who have computers and who can watch this and who can discuss it and who can sit in their homes and talk about it, they can't really appreciate the nature of this assault. Because the great majority of people who died were isolated, extremely vulnerable people that are away from our eyes often, you know,
very elderly. What happened in Ireland is they didn't allow visitors in to see the elderly in the nursing homes. So they were turned away. So that in itself brought on so much trauma. And as you say, social isolation, this psychological stress in and of itself, you know, will bring on early death. But then you add to that the use of midazolam, the use of ventilators in the hospital, the use of morphine, the use of remdesivir, still on the HSE, which is the Health Service Executive Protocols, to this day, despite us jumping up and down about it and showing, wait a second, this thing has a 53% death rate for remdesivir. Nobody listening. And this is, of course, the big issue that we've had, you know, trying to point out. April 2020 in Ireland, you see a giant spike in deaths coming from the nursing homes, because we have all that data coming from our central statistics office. You have people getting on the television who own the nursing homes saying, yes, they used end-of-life protocols. That we've been told in no uncertain terms, this is what happened. But they still don't quite understand. You know, it's still say, if you listen to Irish radio and TV, they're always talking about the pandemic, you know, as if there was a pandemic, as if there was one. But if you really start looking at it, I'd have to agree with you. You know, when you came along and said there was no pandemic. Yes. And it's such a, you know, it's such a relief when somebody of your standing.
Yeah, it's interesting because I not only do I say there was no pandemic, I also say there has never been a pandemic.
You just go right out there. I was going to say into outer space, but I'm not even sure that exists. But incredibly, yes. So we're talking about the Spanish flu, the Black Plague. You know, sometimes you compare this to the bubonic plague. But what you're saying is that, no, that's not the case.
Yeah, I'm not. Now, we have gone all the way back to 1900 in the data, and we've examined all the scientific literature about 1918 and looked at the social, the incredible social circumstances of the day. I mean, just coming out of the First World War and the living conditions and everything, we've looked at that. And we are absolutely convinced that the mechanistically what killed people during 1918 was bacterial pneumonia, without a doubt. And this was before antibiotics were discovered. So that we've argued in detail. So we've gone back to 1900, but I'm in contact with some researchers in Germany who are going through all the historic records and arguing that none of the historic pandemics and large death, you know, periods like the Black Plague and so on have actually been due to a virulent pathogen. Sure, there are always pathogens, and sure, you can die of lung infections and so on. And that's a very common organ to be attacked because it's in contact with the outside environment and you have all these bacteria in your respiratory tract normally anyways. So that, of course, is happening. But the real cause is in each of those cases, there was a huge upheaval, economic and social upheaval at the time, either a change of the leaders changed, like there were wars and things like that, or a huge economic collapse for whatever reason, often involving battles between competing societies and so on. So in each of the pandemics that they're looking at, and they're putting out a book, they're translating it into English now, and they're putting out a book soon. I'm in contact with them and they're seeing the same thing, which I have always believed would be the case, you know, given what I've seen so far. So the conclusion from this at the highest level is spreading diseases are not a threat to the world and to humanity.
I mean, it's huge, especially with disease X around the corner.
Yes.
But before we move on to that, you've got a scoop for us. You've got information on Ireland that you haven't shared yet. It's in your next tranche that you're going to be sharing with the world, but we're getting the exclusive on it. So thank you very much. First of all, I haven't seen it. I have the graph ready to stand by, but I don't know what it is. Will I bring it up?
Well, before you do, let's introduce it just a little bit. You have been pointing out to me that some Irish commentators have been saying things about mortality in Ireland. So maybe you want to summarize the kinds of things they're saying, and then I'll show you the graph that disproves completely what they're saying.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, the situation in Ireland is there's a small little group of us and we have been trying to talk about Irish excess deaths. We've been looking at the Eurostat figures monthly. We've been looking at the Central Statistics Office figures. And then we have our real-time data, which is rip.ie. So it's a death notices website. So that's been giving us incredible information. Now, there are some duplicates, but you take them out and we've been aghast. I mean, I'm still in shock. My eyes are on stalks. They shouldn't be, even though I knew the thing was going to be dangerous, the bioweapon, the vaccine, whatever you want to call it. We have been trying to get the word out, but nobody wants to hear it. So we have a professor, Anthony Staines from Dublin City University. He's been using Euromomo And he's been very confused. He's so confused about the excess debts. Now, he gets the airtime on the mainstream media. And we also have this OECD report that came out. And it said what you've been saying, essentially, that there were no excess debts during the pandemic, right? 2020 would take that. 2021, the rollout of the experimental vaccines, 2022, and out it went. But that's when the real excess debt started in Ireland, 2021, 2022, 2023. Except the OECD report, they've kind of blended it all together. They've done a bit of creative accountancy, let's say. They've fudged the numbers. So now they're saying that there was no excess debt throughout the whole pandemic and that the jabs have worked. You see, the jabs worked in stopping the excess debts, but they're not being honest. And thankfully, we have those Eurostat figures. Thankfully, we have RIP.E, and thankfully, we have you too, and what you're going to share with us.
Okay. Well, of course, there have been... Okay, just one thing before I share it with you.
Yeah.
There are countries, important, large countries, that have absolutely no excess death until you roll out the vaccines. And India is a country that I wrote an entire report about. There was no excess mortality for more than a year after the pandemic was announced, in a country where you would expect spread, okay? And they rolled out their vaccines 3 months later than most other people. And then only then did they have a huge rapid increase in excess mortality, in mortality itself, that corresponded to 3.7 million people that died at the time of this incredible vaccine rollout in India, where they really force vaccinated. There are dozens of videos of chasing down elderly people and vaccinating them against their will and so on. So it was very aggressive in India, and it killed 3.7 million people. So I wrote a paper just on that. So the point is, there are many jurisdictions where nothing happens until you roll out the vaccine. And then there are many jurisdictions where all kinds of things happen in terms of mortality before you roll out the vaccines. Very large. And Ireland is in that group, of course. So we'll look at that in detail. But I just wanted to make that distinction. Mm-hmm. So Australia, New Zealand had no mortality until they rolled out the vaccines. Okay.
Yeah.
And then there are specific boosters that are rolled out in very rapidly to a given age group that immediately give rise to a sharp peak in mortality, immediately following it. And we see this repeatedly wherever we have good data. And that was the basis for our calculation of 17 million, in the sense that from that kind of data, we can calculate what we call the vaccine toxicity. And when we calculate that across the world, for different age groups and based on different peaks in the mortality, we always find approximately the same number, that vaccine mortality is roughly 0.1% on a per injection basis. And when we apply that number, and we know it precisely from now many, many countries, to how many vaccines were actually administered in the world, you multiply the two and you get 17 million plus or minus 500,000. That's where the 17 million comes from.
And okay? That's a conservative estimate.
Well, it's our best estimate based on the data up to the date where we counted the vaccines. That's our best number. So I wouldn't say that it's structurally a conservative number. It's our best number at the time.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the story. All right. You want to look at Ireland?
We really do. That would be amazing.
All right.
Now, let me bring it up. Okay.
So this first, there are three panels in this figure. Now, I want to say that this is unpublished data. This is going into our next paper that we're working very, very hard to get out, that studied more than 100 countries. And the graph that you're showing, or that you will show soon, it was produced by Dr. Joseph Hickey, and I want to explain what it is. So on the top panel of this graph, what you have in blue there is the all-cause mortality, so the raw all-cause mortality in Ireland on a per-week basis. So every week there's a point, and then you draw that blue line, okay? And the vertical gray line is the date at which the pandemic was announced. So the first thing you notice is that immediately after you announce the pandemic, you get a very sharp peak. Do you see that? That very sharp peak there? Well, that peak is due to aggressive hospital and treatment protocols that were implemented immediately after the pandemic was announced. And so that's a hot, that Ireland was a hot spot of deaths. And if you went into Ireland and tried to look at where those deaths occurred, you would find that you have peaks like that associated with large hospitals, cities in which there are large hospitals and things like that. So we've done that for France, for example, and that's what we saw. So that peak, that very first peak, is directly a result of these assaults. And there are many, many countries, more than half the countries in the world, do not have that peak. In other words, countries where they did not practice these protocols and these assaults against people in hospitals and elsewhere in care homes did not have that peak. Now, that's
so
really
are we
important.
Talking like ventilators and then just
it includes ventilators at the beginning. Yes, it does. Yeah. Within those first few months, it includes ventilators. Like in New York City, clearly it includes mechanical ventilators. In northern Italy, where there's a huge peak like this, they were putting two patients on every ventilator. They were telling everyone, we're going to save you all, come into the hospital and we'll put you on a ventilator, you know.
Yeah. Protocol, I have one from Beaumont Hospital in Dublin. Their protocol was, if you had COVID and you went to ICU, you were intubated straight away.
There you go.
That was their protocol. That's
an extremely aggressive protocol that would have killed a lot of people, and it would have caused a lot of lung infections as well, you know, when you start doing that. And so that very first peak is of that nature. And the proof that it cannot be due to a virus is the following. It is everywhere that it occurs around the world, it is synchronous. It happens at the same time immediately after the pandemic is announced. So the virus is waiting for a political announcement that there is a pandemic, and then it's going out and killing people right away. Okay. Mm-hmm. Not only that, within epidemiological theory, if you accept it, how these diseases spread, it is impossible to have synchronicity like that. And the reason it's impossible is because there is a lag between when you see the new disease and when you get a surge and a very high peak of infections, which will correlate to death. So the lag in time between those two events, it is extremely variable from one society to another. It can be as different as, you know, a few weeks in one and months and years in another place. Okay. And that's a firm consequence of the theory of epidemiology. So therefore, this kind of synchronicity that just happens to be aligned with a political announcement is impossible. And so that right away, you see, I wrote a paper back on the 2nd of June, 2020, where I pointed to that peak in many places around the world. And I said, there you go. That's impossible. Mm. It's happening after this political announcement, not before. Nothing happens before until you announce the pandemic. And then it's happening immediately after, synchronously around the world. Excuse me, folks, but that is not a viral respiratory pandemic. Period. So I wrote that.
And I have to say, from journalistically speaking, because I worked in the mainstream media for so long, for me, when I was looking at all the newspapers or looking at all the headlines on the TV, they were all saying the same thing. So that was setting off alarm bells in my world. I was like, well, that's just weird. Everybody's saying the same thing. This has never happened.
Not only were they saying the same thing, they were using precisely the same words, right? It was like they were reading from the same script. It was unbelievable. Yeah.
It was it continues to be an absolutely crazy time, you know, where we're trying to really, we're talking common sense, absolute common sense. And I don't know if it's the repetition of all those messages that went out to the bought and paid through the bought and paid for media that's got people, because people don't seem to be using their logic or their common sense or just their basic brains. You don't have to be Einstein. Well, maybe not Einstein. You don't have to be extra intelligent. You know, it's actually quite basic, really and truly.
Yep. So this mortality in the top panel there is the y-axis starts at zero. So you're getting a look at how big these peaks are compared to the baseline mortality, if you like. And what you notice is even before the pandemic is announced, there's a large seasonal variation. Now, this is really well known. There are always more deaths in the winter than in the summer in the Northern Hemisphere like that. So there's always a trough, a low point in deaths in the summer. So as epidemiologists, what we have to do when we have this kind of data, and Euromomo tries to do it, but they do it badly, and many, many epidemiologists do what I'm going to show you badly, and we have optimized a method that does it very accurately, and I'll explain what that is. But the point is, for decades before, you have these seasonal variations, and they're pretty regular. You have some winters that are more intense than others in terms of death and so on. So what you need to do as an epidemiologist is you need to look at the historic record before the time that is of interest, which is the COVID period, and you have to try to say, well, if there was no COVID, whatever it is, what would the mortality have looked like projecting it into the future? So we've developed a method to do that, which is extremely optimized and powerful. So therefore, once you can do that, you can look at just the difference between your projection and the actual death values, and that gives you the excess mortality. And you've got that panel up now, which is the second panel. And so what you see there is that the gray horizontal line is the zero point. So that means that everything is normal. So you see that before the pandemic, everything was normal. There is a slightly, in 2018, the winter was more intense, but you see that the light blue shading represents a conservative estimate of the error bar, or a good estimate of the error bar on each of these weeks. So it's pretty much zero excess before COVID with an error. And we could show many more years. We decided to start at 2018 for this graph just to be able to expand the COVID period. But if you had more years, like we start at 2015, for example, it's a complete flat line until you get to COVID. So that peak that we were looking at previously in the all-cause mortality, which occurs just after that vertical gray line, is seen here in the excess mortality as an excess, a very sharp excess mortality peak. I think you can see that.
So that's around April 2020, I think. Yes. That's around when they were doing the call in the nursing homes and they were trying to get the numbers up. So they were trying to create this pandemic. So they were pumping out the fear and they wanted to get people injected. So this seemed to be one way to do it.
Well, these are real deaths, obviously, and we're just counting deaths. And the top panel was the raw all-cause mortality per week. The bottom panel is now what we call excess mortality per week, and using a proper method to calculate the excess. And so this is the best state-of-the-art picture of excess mortality by time in Ireland that you can have. Okay, this is it. You're using hard data. You're using a rigorous statistical method to get excess. This is what it looks like. And so
the second peak looks like the rollout of the first
precisely.
Phase.
So in orange, you have the number of doses administered per week. So that's the rollout. Now, it's very deceptive to look at it that way, because you have to realize that the vaccines are much more deadly. The rollouts are associated to much more mortality in the elderly than other age groups. In fact, we have demonstrated repeatedly that the mortality associated with the vaccine rollouts is exponentially higher as you get older. And it doubles, the risk of dying per injection doubles every 4 or 5 years in age. So it's a very dramatic increase. And when you get into the 80 plus year olds, 90 plus year olds, you basically have a toxicity that corresponds to, it can be as high as one death per 20 injections. Okay, wow. So it gets very high. So when you look at the rollout for the whole population, all ages combined like this, it doesn't really, you can't interpret it simply, because you would need to know what was rolled out to which age group, given that the age effect is so dominant. You need to know that. We're not seeing that here. We're not seeing, for example, when you get into the low dose rates, you're actually, most of the population is refusing to be vaccinated into 2022, but you're still rolling out boosters to the most elderly. And you're still pushing that in a big way because the logic of the system is we need to protect them. So when you plot just the booster rollouts, you do see peaks there. And so there is some important booster rollout that corresponds to that excess mortality that you see later on.
Well, there in 2022, it looks like early 2022, it really peaks.
In terms of the rollout to the entire population. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So now let's stay there. Let's stay on the excess mortality. There's so much more to say about this.
Okay.
So you're right that next peak over, the big one, which is happening in the winter of 2021. Okay. It coincides with the first initial rollout of the vaccines, and the initial rollouts of the vaccines, they prioritized the elderly. So in other words, those first doses are the most deadly because you're giving them directly to those people who are most likely to die, who are challenged in a more important way. Okay. And so it is possible that very large peak is associated to that initial rollout of the most elderly. Okay. So there is that possibility. And we have studied this country to country. Mm-hmm. And then you move in, you move beyond, and then a large part of the vaccination is occurring, and it is associated with a followed great big hump in excess mortality. You see, you're above the zero there, okay? And then later, there's still more excess mortality. There's a peak, then it comes down. Now, we're understanding this coming down. You can see that the last large peak, the third large peak, after that, you come down. We're understanding that coming down as what we call a dry tinder effect. That's our interpretation of it right now. So basically, there was high mortality just before because you were rolling out boosters to the elderly. And once you've done that, the death to the elderly is less later on because you've already killed them by what you just did. So that's why you have a sharp come down like this. And that feature is present in virtually every country in the world where they were rolling out boosters in that period, and then they stopped, and then the mortality comes down. In some countries, the excess mortality becomes negative there. In Ireland, it stays at zero, but in several countries, it goes negative. So that's, we believe, a dry tinder effect. But then look, after in 2023 in Ireland, the excess mortality is positive. You still have excess mortality. You're not vaccinating anymore. You're in 2023. Everything is supposedly over. A viral respiratory pandemic has never been proposed to last more than a year or a year and a half. And here we are in 2023, and we have a huge, persistent excess mortality in Ireland.
And nobody wants to talk about it within the mainstream media. So if we look at 2020, 2021, 2022, I mean, it was just all over the news, the case-demic, more so than a pandemic. You know, it was fear porn, trying to get people vaccinated, or so they called it, get them to roll up their sleeves, take part in a medical trial. They didn't mention any of this, really, that it was a medical trial or the nanotechnology part. But now that we're still in this excess death mode, there's no mention of it. And when you do mention it, they say things like conspiracy theories.
So there's definitely excess mortality in 2023 in Ireland. It's very significant. It's you know, the statistical error is there. It's persistent, and it's week after week. It is there. And this feature of excess mortality in 2023 is present in many, many countries around the world. Many, many countries. There are very few countries that have that come down essentially to the normal, which is a near zero excess mortality in 2023. It does happen in many places, but there's also many like this that have that excess mortality. And guess what? I'm going to tell you something from our completely unpublished, and you know, we're still verifying everything, but what we have now is we have a very strong correlation, and I mean very strong correlation, between that excess mortality in 2023 and how much you vaccinated in the country. Okay? So it's strongly correlated. So that suggests that persistent excess mortality after you stop vaccinating, mostly, is strongly correlated to how much you've been vaccinating in the country. okay? Because there are huge differences in the vaccine coverage from country to country. And there are large differences in that excess mortality in 2023. And the two are highly correlated. And I'm talking about a Pearson correlation coefficient that's above plus 0.8 in the elderly. So this is at least controversial evidence of a mechanism like what people have been calling turbo cancer. Mm. Okay.
Well, so that's
coming out. Subject. That's coming out in our next paper. Yeah.
And people are very afraid of it because I don't think they even really want to take part. They thought they were doing the right thing. You know, it was like save granny and the pressure was on. And, you know, I think the media in particular really appealed to people's good nature. It was like, come on now, we're doing this. We're all in this together. Trust the science, that repetition of messages. And I think most people are decent. They just thought they were doing the right thing. You know, they just, yes, they wanted to do the right thing. This is what they felt was going to be the right thing. Now we've got all these excess deaths, these turbo cancers. We had Andrew Bridgen yesterday in Westminster Hall, again, talking about trends and excess deaths. Incredibly important work, but he's still talking about a virus. I don't know if you got to see it. He's still talking about COVID. So that there's a glitch there. I kind of go, why is he saying that?
Let's take a look at the final panel, and then we can turn it off and have a discussion.
Okay.
A hard discussion. So this final panel is just to complete this figure that we're going to be showing in this next paper for more than 100 countries. In blue there, you've got the cumulative mortality, excess mortality. So you see that even if you add it all up, it's very, very little before the announcement of the pandemic, and then it starts to increase, and then there's sharp rises at various times and so on. And in orange, you've got the cumulative addition of vaccine administration of doses, basically. And so you're looking at it that way. But what you don't see is that the boosters are so little in amount compared to vaccinating everybody with the primary doses that you don't see the booster rollout that corresponds to a sharp rise there in the mortality. So there's details like that we're still going to be describing and so on. There you go. That's what it looks like.
Okay.
So
well, we've looked at
Ireland in some detail there.
That is brilliant for us because we, you know, the more information we have, the better. A lot of it's just confirming again, you know, what we suspect, but we need it confirmed. So really, really important. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. But yeah, back to that debate yesterday, Andrew Bridgen. Again, I thought he did a remarkable job. You know, he's a great orator, and he's talking about the subject that nobody wants to talk about. But I think along with Dr. John Campbell, they talk about this virus and the pandemic like it was real. So they're missing something. I know Bridgen has studied virology, so he has a background in science.
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, you get indoctrinated into these professions, and there are dominant paradigms in each of these professions. And it's very hard to be objective after you've been subjected to that kind of education. Whereas I'm a physicist, I can take a fresh look at all of this and I can say, well, why is it that you believe that? Why is that dominant paradigm so dominant? And what the heck is going on? And what is the strongest evidence that this is true? And so on. I can ask those questions as a physicist, whereas most virologists and immunologists are not even able to question the idea that viruses can cause the spread of viral respiratory diseases. They're not able to question it.
Well, I mean, just look at what's going on in third level. What's going on in the universities? Like you'd Epstein. So Epstein was pumping money into all the Ivy League colleges in the United States. So what was he getting in return for that? You have the Gates Foundation pumping all the money. Even where I studied in DCU, they've now a misinformation section. You know, journalism was what I did. So we see that it's ruined. These sponsorships, these grants that go in, and everybody says, oh, he's a philanthropist. It's just wonderful. We're getting all this free money. Well, there's nothing free about it.
Well, it's clear that the medical schools and the research labs are polluted, are captured by pharma. There's no question about that, and that's been the case for a long, long time. But it's also true that just honest thinking scientists get captured by the dominant paradigms in their field and have great difficulty escaping it. And will argue till they're blue in the face all the reasons that they believe what they believe. Okay, that those two things are true. It doesn't mean, like, I'm talking about scientists who are not getting paid by pharma, scientists who are just really trying to understand what's going on, but they're using the glasses of their discipline, and therefore they cannot see some things that to others might be obvious.
And I was looking at, well, I don't know if he's a colleague of yours, Dr. Byron Bridle.
Yes.
And he was talking just today about how impossible it is. I mean, he was down in his basement, you know, he's kicked off campus. He can't even go into his laboratory. He cannot do the work that he needs to do because he went up against the narrative,
Yes.
because he's not saying, you know, what is expected of him. And we've seen that in our Ireland, is because it's so small, you really get to see it. All the people I thought were intelligent, they all got into this group think. They all started repeating stuff. They weren't showing any signs of
Well,
critical thinking.
yeah, not all. There's a lot of variety if you start to look at the various things that are being said. Even I've had discussions with Byram, and I consider him a friend, not a close friend.